Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 2.5 of the Practice Networks podcast. We had such a great time talking to Sarah Emerson, our health engagement team leader. We wanted to add the rest of our chat here. If you have any questions, if you have any feedback, just let me know at sam@justlife.org.uk, and hopefully we'll hear you on the podcast soon. As our episode begins, I asked Sarah about real, feasible ways she might go about helping someone in temporary or emergency accommodation. Do enjoy.
I think there's loads of stuff. I mean, it is literally as simple as I bought your phone and I left it at reception, and here's my number and here's your number and I'll phone you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It could be leaving notes under people's doors. It could be
not applying too much pressure to get health stuff done.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think everyone has a very specific style of support work and of casework. Speaking from experience, I was always very silly and very fun, which, I mean, is part of who I am anyway, but it does, you know, it puts people at ease. It's less scary. You can just have a good time with someone and build a good relationship, take the time to build a good relationship with someone. Yeah.
I think for anyone, authority can be scary. And so, like you say, being able to actually connect on a human level is such a big, important part of the job, right?
It's definitely worth saying that health engagement is very fun.
Yeah.
I mean, everything we work in is very sad, and we see lots of very awful tragedy, but day to day it's fun. We meet cool people and like we get to know about their lives. Wow. And like we get to see them get better, and there is lots of joy in health engagement.
There is so much joy, yeah, when you have that relationship with someone, like, and you learn about how cool people are.
Yeah,
as
people
well
are cool.
People are so cool.
I've learned that now in the 4 months I've been working in the support sector. But I remember when I had my initial interview and chat with you, Sarah, and you said some things that, you know, that was the day I went home. Everyone has it where they go, ooh, okay, well, here we are. That just happened. But I've just seen the level of empathy and compassion within the office, the support, the celebration of small wins, of big wins. Yeah. You know, as hard as some of these topics are, we are humans, and we do have the capacity to deal with these things?
Yes, I think it's learnt though.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what we call vicarious trauma, which is where you experience some of the trauma that your clients experience by being empathetic with them and being in them in that. And you really do need to learn how to manage that in yourself.
Yeah.
I've worked in services for 14 years. I've worked in rough sleeping. I've worked in young people. I've worked in health inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it's all the same stuff. They're people who are suffering. And when you spend a lot of time in that darkness, it can affect you. And it's all about learning what you can and can't do, what your role is and isn't,
yeah,
and to put boundaries around it. And at the end of the day, you need to know that you've done everything you can.
Mm.
And I'm an absolute advocate for learn everything you possibly can, because having someone opposite you who says, my life's fallen apart, can you help me? And you haven't got any answers is the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah.
So training my team, being with them in that, teaching each other, learning from each other, supporting each other is absolutely essential to survive this kind of work.
Mm.
And that's where you get the joy from as well. Being with each other, being like, oh, something's come up, but I'm not stuck. Someone will help me. Someone will advise me. I'll be all right. And you can kind of share that experience with your client. Mm. We're not stuck. We're all right. And so that's kind of a really important thing that I feel very passionate about, that workers should never feel at risk. They should never feel stuck. And you should never think that there's nothing left to do.
Yeah.
And every worker's got a different specialism, at different levels of resilience, different levels of boundaries. Someone on our team is better at injuries. Someone might be more interested in supporting women, for example. Really kind of knowing what you're interested in.
Know your niche.
Know your niche. That's a good line. Yeah.
I have a few catchphrases. One of them is know your niche.
Know your niche. What are the other catchphrases?
Yeah, tell us.
No one is beyond recovery.
Oh, I love it.
The subtitle for this episode. Oh, fantastic. Okay. I was going to ask with that in mind as well. Sadly, we've just lost our diabetes specialist.
Yeah. Good. He's not dead. He just left.
Yeah, he's gone home. Good egg, though. Is that something... how do you basically develop a specialism then?
Well, part of that is because the NHS spends a lot of money on diabetes. 10% of the NHS costs go on diabetes, and so there was
10%. Is that 10%, right?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I did learn that fact from Craig. I'm going to assume it's true.
Thanks, Craig.
Yeah. Miss you, Craig.
Yes, so it's a huge, vast amount of money. And so there was this kind of push to look at where diabetes can be supported. And he was part of a big project for 6 months that Diabetes UK ran to try and meet lots of different pockets of people and how we can improve their health in order to move away from needing diabetes services. Or so, 'cause lots of the time, diabetes type 2 can be massively supported by diet and lifestyle.
Yeah.
But there are lots of reasons why people aren't able to then do those things, and it's sort of working out how to support each different group of people. So ours was people experiencing homelessness. And so Craig took on a small caseload of people who were in emergency accommodation who were also experiencing diabetes, which is an absolute nightmare. It's a massive job for somebody to live with both those things. And so he was looking at educating people around their health and how to kind of think about the other stuff around it in order to improve their health. So the reason that that specialism happened is because it was additional funding to our normal one. And we were approached to say, you guys work in health, how about diabetes? We know diabetes and homelessness is an extremely difficult combination of things. And so that's where we got Craig from. The other specialisms in the team have come naturally because of this push to know your niche. It's really important that you know where you do your best work because it gives people the best outcomes.
Yeah, totally.
And I manage the allocation. I allocate referrals. And so I'm always trying to skill match or vibe match, if you like, what kind of referral it is versus the worker. So an example of that is someone on my team is very, very good at working with women. Someone else is in their own time learning to be a mental health worker and so uses those skills. And so it's this idea of thinking about you will do your best work with a group that you're kind of naturally know how to communicate with.
And I think that just makes sense because we're humans working with humans. And so in order to kind of really, I like your idea of kind of vibe matching, as you called it, because not everyone gets on with everyone because we're all humans.
And it's all chance. We don't know. You can't know from a referral what someone's actually like, but that it's just kind of trying to work towards that idea of doing the best work you can.
Yeah. Absolutely. Jules, you have a fantastic question for Sarah.
Oh, no pressure. You've touched upon it a little bit. Can you talk to me a little bit about ending with someone? Because I imagine it's very difficult for a client to end what is effectively a relationship with a worker. Tell me a bit more about how you do that.
Hmm.
There's no magic answer. The kind of supporter and supportee dynamic is extremely unusual.
Yeah.
It's a very odd thing that someone steps into your life so hard for a bit of time and then steps back out again. And lots of the time I work with people who have had lots of rejection, who experience a lot of poor relationships, and it can be really jarring for people for that to end. Some people manage it differently. Some people will drift off and not be told it's over. Some people have a very clear celebrated ending where you get to take them for lunch and say well done. So it's really mixed, but our reason for ending is generally that somebody is doing well. So endings should be a celebration. Endings is this point where you don't need us anymore. Look how great you're doing. You manage this thing on your own, you're in appropriate accommodation, you're feeling a bit better, see you later. You know, and sometimes that might mean referring them on to other services, and sometimes it just might mean that they go forth and don't need us anymore. So generally, to end well is to celebrate somebody's achievements, and we would do that nicely by taking them for lunch, maybe writing them a goodbye card, maybe just pointing out some of people on my team like to literally write the bullet points to somebody of what they have achieved.
Ooh, that's a nice idea.
And to somebody who maybe doesn't feel like they've made a massive difference to their lives, it is it's significant to see it all written down and say, yes, I did that. I did that myself. And actually, there might be things that we've helped with, but ultimately someone does it for themselves. You know,
yeah.
We can take you to the doctors, but you've got to be there. You know, you've got to have the conversation. You've got to take the medication, you know, whatever it is, you know, you need to be involved in it. So, yeah, there's lots of things to celebrate at the point of ending. But some people don't agree. They don't think we should stop working with them.
Mm.
Some people are really institutionalized by services and so assume that they'll have services forever when actually they don't really need to, but the undoing of it can be really difficult.
Mm.
And so it's something that we do delicately as much as possible, but things do have to end. Some of that ending starts right at the beginning. Hello, my name's Sarah. I'm going to be your health engagement worker for this period of time, until this point, until the point where hopefully we can sort out your housing, address some of your health needs, and whatever else is going on. This idea already that it's not forever. Really, people shouldn't need us forever. That's not the goal.
Mm.
The goal is that we're here to sort out the complicated mess of a health system and a housing system. And then after that, once that's kind of untangled a bit, you should be able to carry on with whatever it was you were doing otherwise. Mm. That's the goal. So we're not setting people up to say, I'll be with you forever, because that's not how this works. And also, it's not a sustainable model. People will leave their jobs, things will change, funding changes. You know, we can't suggest to people that things will ever stay the same. We are just here for a small bit of time.
Yeah.
And so teaching people that early on, and also explaining clearly why it ends, really does help.
Yeah. I think picking up on a few points, I think your point on transparency is really vital in this. It's being really clear what the objective of a health engagement worker is. But that doesn't negate the very real relationship that you have with some of your clients. Some of your clients you work with for a few years.
Mm.
And from both sides, there is a relationship there, isn't it? So there's a real...
It's a loss.
Yeah, it is a loss. You're right.
It doesn't really exist in life other than a breakup.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's the sort of closest... You don't really end friendships. Mm. You don't really end relationships as actively as that dynamic, other than perhaps a romantic one, which obviously this is not like at all, but it's that sort of thing of like a very clear end to someone that you hung out with for potentially quite a long time and who was with you in some really difficult things.
That's true.
Can we get an idea of a timeline? You say potentially quite a long time. Yeah. What's the longest scenario?
The longest? I've got people in my case that I've worked for 6 years.
6 years.
Okay. That's partly because I've only worked it for seven.
Hmm.
But generally, I would like to say the average person stays on for a year. But it maybe 18 months. It really depends on what their housing move on is and how accessible it is.
Yeah.
If they have an easy, quite straightforward housing plan that we can get straight to quite quickly, and same with their health needs or whatever else is going on, the less sort of complicated their setup is, the quicker we can get through it. But people are messy. There's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And also, I say health and housing like they're all we do. There's all sorts of other things that come up. People, I don't know, get divorced or have their children removed or new health things crop up or... I don't know, they want to move area. There's all sorts of things that come alongside it that we also work with. Mm. So it really depends on a case-by-case scenario. But I would like to think an average of sort of 18 months.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, this idea that it's not forever.
Sounds like your team are very agile and flexible.
They are.
And very kind of, they adapt to the needs of the people you're working with, which is great.
Yeah. Again, it's a bit like what I said before about the luxury of being able to do that. You know, we have a luxury of a personalisation budget. We have the luxury of a taxi account. We have the luxury of a no pressure of the numbers of the amount of people that we work with. So lots of those things mean that we're able to do that more flexibly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not assumed and it's not taken for granted.
Mm. To plug Common Ambition a little bit, we are doing a little bit of work on endings. So we really want to co-produce an end of the project that is comfortable and safe for everyone, knowing that a lot of our members have had endings in services as well. So it's quite something that's quite interesting and that is comes up in the sector a lot is how do you end safely with someone. So do take a look at our website, bhcommonambition.org.uk, I think. I might need to correct that.
I'll pop the link in the show notes.
Thanks, Sam. And have a look at kind of goals for what we call ending well, so that we ensure that it's safe and trauma-informed.
And I'd like to celebrate you for that, because you're taking something that on the surface isn't fantastic and being very proactive about it.
Mm. And talking about it and being transparent about it.
Very much so. Sarah, would you like to tell us about team days?
Woo! So this is something that Jules wanted to talk about, because I'm known in Just Life for organising a team day.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked about it before, about the importance of learning together and supporting each other and celebrating each other's work. This work is really difficult, and you often see your peers in corporate worlds make a lot more money or do a lot more things or whatever. And so it's about giving each other the opportunity to celebrate the work we do.
Yeah.
It often involves lots of games where everyone is nice to each other. And generally I like to ask other people from the sector who I know are brilliant at their jobs, teach us how to be more like them. So we've covered all sorts of topics. The last one we did was working in HIV. Previously before we've had people from mental health services, people from learning disabilities, from all sorts of stuff. Because health is so broad, homelessness is so broad, there's so much to learn and there's so much to know. So it's this idea of learning from each other, learning from each other within the team, learning from each other within the sector, and to celebrate each other. And Jules has been on my team days.
One of our colleagues once compared to a team day to Christmas Day.
Yeah, he said it's better than Christmas.
Professional Christmas.
He said it was better than Christmas. They are glorious and fun and really just nurture the team as a kind of cohesive, beautiful thing that they are.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. So if you ever want to have a team day, talk to Sarah.
And go celebrate your frontline workers.
And celebrate frontline workers. There. Yeah, exactly. Which is what we do with the practice network and with the frontline network as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is very much an education tool, but you know, you're preaching to the choir.
I know. So
if you do have any sort of more general applicable advice for frontline workers and how they get by on a day to day.
Keep learning. There's so much more always to learn. I mean, there are trends that come and go, and I don't really mean that sort of thing. I mean, keep learning about all the types of things that might affect an individual. It's also really important, and I know you're all sick of hearing this, but look after yourself.
Yeah.
That is absolutely essential. I used this example once in some training where I was talking to people who work with people who are long-term unemployed. And I went around the room and I said, I've had a meeting with all of you today. So say they were sort of my client group, if you like. And I just went around and picked up a pen from each person. By the end of it, I'm holding 10 pens.
Mm.
The pens were a representative of a little bit of something of their story that I kept, a little bit of their pain that I was holding for them, a little bit of something that I took from them. And by the end of it, you got a whole handful.
And so you've got a pencil case.
You got a whole pencil case. And if that's your everyday, that is a lot to hold. So think about it. Think about how you are at the end of the day. Shake it off. Look after yourself, because you're going back in tomorrow and you want to make it as sustainable and as manageable as possible, because there is the risk that we lose good workers because people aren't able to look after themselves. So to do the best work you can possibly do also involves looking after yourself.
Yeah, thank you.
Great advice.
We speak of positive endings, and it feels like this is quite a natural place to wrap up then.
Mm. Yep.
I really cannot thank you enough, Sarah. It's been as informative as it has been entertaining.
You're very welcome.
And hopefully, obviously there's some real substance there. Do let us know if this is a topic that has resonated with you. Do let us know if you know how Sarah feels. And do let us know if you have any more questions, and we'd be glad to get you back.
Sure. Happy to come back, yeah.
Fantastic. So as always, I'd just like to say thank you to Jules.
Thank you, Sam. That was really fun.
Fantastic. And thank you as well, Sarah.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yes. You're welcome. This has been the Practice Networks podcast, funded by Changing Futures and facilitated by Just Life. We've recorded from Projects in the Brighton Lanes today, and we're very grateful to have you as our guest. If you have any questions or you'd like to know anything about the project itself, just get in contact with Sam at justlife.org.uk and have a fantastic day.